You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, college football fans across the nation and around the world. This is Tim May with yet another Tim May podcast, an aptly named podcast. Isn't that correct, Awesome?
I think it's the most accurate name of any podcast that has ever existed.
No, we ought to just record that aspect of it because Spence, or as I call him, Suspense, said the same thing last week, and he was quoting you. So we could just dispense with all the suspense and just move right on into the podcast from now on.
Well, and he is a superstar now. I'm lucky to even be back on this show.
No, he's, you know, he deserves his props just like everybody else, right? I mean, he works his rear end off and he knows what he's talking about. That's the two main requirements when you're on a podcast, in my opinion, or any other cast as it goes. But, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back. Awesome. You know him as Austin Ward. I call him Awesome because, I got tired of calling him the other things I was calling him, Boston. Some people got tired of that. I just need a new nickname every year, you know, to just keep it fresh.
Let's do it.
Awesome. Real quick, I've got a special guest on this week. We'll just jump right into it after that long delay from the beginning to right now. We'll jump right into it. My guest this week is James Laurinaitis, former three-time All-American linebacker, Ohio State, a Butkus Award winner, et cetera, long-time NFL star until suddenly, you know, an injury basically knocked him out of the NFL. And, you know, what I want to discuss with him, and you'll hear it in this recording we did, is number one, you know, he was on a team in 2006, got beat 41-14 by Florida, got bushwhacked in the national championship game, came back and lo and behold was in the national championship game the next year against LSU. They got beat again, but not as badly, but the point was, what I wanted to get into him with was, you know, that little interim between 6 and 7, how you dealt with that as a team, you know, basically not embarrassed, because I think when you get the national championship team, you're a pretty good team, you have all reason to hold your head high, but, you know, that night you just didn't have it and the other team did, and so I wanted to get into that with talking with him about those kind of things, about his NFL career, how it was not necessarily cut short, but all NFL careers come to an end sooner or later. We talked about that, and we talked about Ohio State and the linebacker play and everything else from that. But, you know, we'll come back from that conversation I had with him, and you and I will talk about this upcoming 2021 Ohio State team and how some key returnees, which we've talked about over the last several weeks, but these key returnees could vault it, maybe not into the Alabama range of last year, because I think that was an aberration team, as I keep calling it, where you had these key ingredients come back and form a super team on offense, not necessarily on defense, but how Ohio State could possibly be in the realm of that kind of thinking. I think you agree with me a little bit, right?
I do. I can't wait to get into it.
Okay. But you know what? We'll be back to talk about that and a few more things, ladies and gentlemen, after this conversation I had with James Laurinaitis. And ladies and gentlemen, as promised, here's a special guest star for this week. You may know him from fame as an Ohio State Buckeye or fame as a St. Louis Ram or maybe fading glory as a New Orleans Saint if you're tuning in from New Orleans. But James Laurinaitis, welcome finally to the Tim May podcast.
It's great to be on with you, buddy.
Hey, man, I wanted to – you know, you're one of those guys that was from those mid-2000 teams at Ohio State that were – man, were right there, you know, right there. And couldn't quite grasp that brass ring at the end, but the reason I wanted to bring you on and talk to you about this is that when I was on you and Bo Bishop's show one time, we were talking about that, about how do you bounce back, you know, from what happened to Ohio State in that national championship game against Alabama. You guys had a similar fate against Florida in 2006. Y'all were number 1 in the country, just won the game of the century over Michigan, and then right. boom bang, you know, Ted Ginn Jr. scores a touchdown on the first play of the game, hurts his ankle against Florida. Next thing you know, it's 41-14. What what advice, I guess, what did you learn from bouncing back from that to the next year? Because y'all played for the national championship again. Not that it was a fairy tale ending, still lost to LSU, but it was a much more competitive game, let's put it that way. But what did you learn? What did you guys learn about yourselves in that interim between 2006 and 2007 that you think will help this team?
Well, first off, it humbled us. You're put on a pedestal at Ohio State anyway. So I get there in 05 and lost a really close game to Texas, lost a really close game at Penn State. I still think that's the most talented team I may have been on, and you have two losses, but you end the year on a high note, and you beat Notre Dame in the Fiesta Bowl. A lot of guys coming back on offense, not much known on defense, and then you start winning and winning and winning. You're ranked, you know, that 1-2 win down in Texas in 06, and you're put on this pedestal, game of the century. Everything focused around that year. You know, I don't remember much about hearing a lot about Florida at all. I remember a lot of attention, so much was on us in Michigan that year.
Yeah.
That when we went down there, you really felt, all right, we're just going to go take care of business. I really felt anytime I went into a football game with Troy Smith as my quarterback, we weren't going to lose. Just wasn't even, and I, it wasn't even in my mind that we could lose with him at QB and the way we were playing. Teddy gets hurt, and it was more than Teddy getting hurt. That obviously was a huge chunk of our speed on offense, but they whooped us up front. They spread us out on defense. Percy Harvin and the RPO stuff that was way ahead of where we are now. Right. It was one of those games that just, it was humbling to watch. You wish a game could have caught you off guard earlier in the year with the team to get you ready for something like that. There was a lot of things we had to coach up, and it motivated you, you know, to come back the next year and to try to get back there. And what was weird about 2017, we never really thought national title. We thought, let's just go. It was really one of those years where let's try to win the Big Ten. Right. And then we'll see kind of what happens because of that. And getting upset by Illinois at home, you're like, oh gosh, well, that ends. That was really like one and done, right? The BCS. You weren't losing and getting in some playoff. If you lost, you felt like you were out of it. And then chaos ensued with Pitt and West Virginia and Missouri and Oklahoma and some stuff that happened. And it was just the whole offseason leading in those seven was just humbling of like, holy smokes, we have to improve. Like, we thought we were the number one team in the country all year long. Just like this team, I'm sure, thought that they were – I mean, you ran through teams in the Big Ten. You thought you were that school and that team all year long. To get beat on a stage like that kind of helps you take an assessment of yourself and be like, all right, where do I have to improve personally? Look in the mirror and try to get better to hopefully avoid that a second time.
Yeah. Well, you know what's interesting, though, is I'm thinking back to that Florida game, and this is – you know, this is now 14 years removed from it. But it kind of reminded me of the Alabama game is y'all didn't really know what to do with Florida. I'm talking about in the secondary. And you may disagree with me, but I'm just looking at it. It kind of reminded me of the same thing that happened with Alabama, you know, and there was a lot of like, you know, I thought Ohio State number one against Alabama was going to step up and try to bring pressure right up the gap. You know, when you lose Tommy Togia, that was a big, huge loss. You had to pluck one guy out of that defensive lineup. It changed the dynamic of the lineup, of the approach. It was Tommy Togia. But I thought they would get after it up the middle on Mac Jones, then get up and press the receivers. And it was the opposite of that from the standpoint of what they did with the receivers. And there was a lot of, you know, Devontae Smith doing this, cutting there and wide open, you know, because the, you know, whatever cornerback was on him at the time was sort of standing there trying to play catch. And you can't play catch with fastballs like that. You know, you got to kind of – And it kind of reminded me that, but what I'm getting to here is that's where the saying came that, you know, the SEC was so far ahead of the Big Ten in terms of speed. If you remember coming out of that 2006 national championship game, and I didn't think that was accurate. It was just the way y'all approached it that put this stigma, you know, on the Big Ten. Now, there was some speed differential, but did you see sort of a similar thing with the Alabama? The reason I'm asking that is I think Alabama was almost a once – in a 10-year kind of team offensively on this past season. Number two, I've been following Alabama football since I was 6 years old, which means 60 years. Best offense I ever saw from Alabama. Do you really revamp everything based on going against that one offense that one night? You follow my drift?
Yeah, I don't think they need to revamp everything. I think Ohio State's set up to win national championships. I think you're right. I think they hit a buzzsaw of a team that is one of the best – maybe in the history of college football, right up there with LSU a year ago. All the numbers say they're the same. Devontae Smith was incredible. The feelings are the same in the sense that you felt like whenever you finally did get Alabama into a situation like, oh, yes, we finally have him covered, Mac Jones scrambled for 8 yards and he needed seven, right? And it was just like, son of a gun, any little thing. And it kind of felt that way against Florida. You felt like you finally stopped the run, and then they hit you with a bubble to Percy, and he's running for it, and you're like, my goodness, we can't get out of this, right? So you're in that kind of feeling of whatever I'm calling isn't working, and whatever we're playing isn't working. And that's a bad feeling amid, you know, in the middle of a football game, especially when your offense isn't just rolling themselves. You feel like, gosh, if we let up another, players feel that. But I think this team is much better suited for winning a national title because there's just a lot more speed across the board, Tim. Like, we were fine at the position. Like, we were fine with Teddy and we were fine at corner. If you all run 40s, it wasn't that. It was the fact that their D ends, their D tackles in 06 were so much more athletic than our offensive line. And it's ever since Urban came here, he really changed that. Like, our tackles, from looking at the tackles that I played with without naming names, and then looking at Nicholas Petit-Ferrer, what his body type looks like, or a Thayer Mumford, or you just say, well, that looks different. They're both big, but they just look different. And Mickey Marotti and the way he's developed them, you went from the big, beefy, we're just big and going to overpower you, and teams started beating us with quickness. And then you have those guys who are explosive and big. Like, you know, we play LSU and you got Glenn Dorsey and you got Jackson. You got all these guys that are just mammoths. Yeah. So those are the type of things that I think changed our thinking. And when Urban got here, he saw that and said, we got to change the body types up front. We'll get the skill. And I think right now this team is fine when it comes to all of that. I honestly think that you just ran into a perfect scenario with Alabama, and look, sometimes it happens like that where games just get out of control, but I don't think the two are comparable. I really don't. I think that this team is a lot better off to have a nice rebound than we were in 06.
Yeah. Gotcha, man. Hey, you just real quick, I'm gonna hit some real quickies with you because, you know, time is limited, et cetera. In this day and age, what was different that you could put your finger on about the play of the Ohio State linebackers the last two seasons compared to 2018 that you could, you know, define for people out there who maybe don't understand how maybe a coaching change, a change in philosophy can, like, put people in the right places at the right times, if you follow my drift there?
Yeah, I think, you know, what Greg tried to do a lot, Shiano, was just the fact that he wanted to do – so there's two philosophies, right? Like, there's a philosophy of, we have so much talent, we can do a lot of different things, and we can show in disguise, and we can really overwhelm people. And sometimes that stuff works. You know, when you mug the line of scrimmage, you overwhelm protections and you get really good matchups and you win because of those, and you play man on the back end and say, try to beat us, right? You can do that.
Yeah.
A lot of the stuff that hit Ohio State at that time was stuff on the ground, because when you're mugged up like that, you have no opportunity to read the play that's happening. And when you try to do so much different blitz stuff, there's only so much stuff of reps and practice that you can utilize. So if the other thinking, and what Coach Halfley and what Greg Madison had brought here, and now Coach Combs and you know, are kind of taking forward, and what Coach Day likes, is let's pare it all down because we have superb talent, and let's make sure our guys really know what they're doing. And then let's play fast. Let's utilize our speed. So when you have limited reps, and this is what the Seahawks did, you know, back with the Legion of Boom, they said, we're going to play single high, three or man. We're going to know every single team's answer when we watch film to what they want to do against similar defenses, single high, man beaters, and then three high, or single high zone beaters. And then let's play those plays because that's what they're going to run against us. And let's be really good at it and just know exactly where we need to be on every route concept. And those are two different thoughts. Both work. I mean, if you watch the game yesterday, right, you can – Steve Spagnuolo is not that way. Steve Spagnuolo, I played for, he's going to have four calls in one defense. He's going to call Okie Sniper Wild Tahoe, and you're going to be like, wait, what? It's all dependent on where the back is, what blitz, whether it's coverage, the formation. It can change on motion. But he's beaten Tom Brady twice in the Super Bowl because he's confused them with changing pressures and all that. Where there's also been the Seahawks who, like I said, have won by just saying, hey, we're going to play three, try to beat us. We know you're going to try to run against us. We're just better. So I think what you've seen over the last 2 years at LB is you've seen linebackers who are playing more confident just because they know where to align. And then once you know what your assignment is and you're aligned, you're not thinking, okay, hold on, am I supposed to be in the A gap or the B gap here? I said, hut, now you're running. When you know, I know where I'm supposed to be at, now what are they in? Oh, now I can anticipate these three plays, and then you go, and you're allowed to play faster. And I think that's what you've seen over the last couple of years.
You know, yeah, it's interesting because, I mean, it was a stark difference, in my opinion. It was one of those situations in 18 where I just saw Ohio State line up unsound on occasion or just having
– oh, yeah.
You know, that should never happen when you have as much talent as Ohio State has, you know.
Yeah.
Unsound should never be in the conversation. But you're right. I mean, and then people start running to the fire, and then it really gets you in trouble, you know. Wait till the fire comes to you. Hey, yep. I don't know. I wanted to ask you, as you went around the Big Ten, because, man, by the way, you are retired, right?
I am.
But you're not retired, right? I mean, you had the
– I'm like you. I retire like you.
Yeah. You retire too. Thank you very much. I'm a trendsetter. yeah. I'm a fashion plate and trendsetter. During the football season, correct me if I'm wrong, you were doing Bo Bishop. You and Bo were doing your show every day. Yep. And you were doing a Big Ten game on Saturday, and then you were sideline. Was a sideline reporter? How would you describe it? In the NFL, I mean, were you actually at the games? I mean, how did that work this year?
Well, so last year I was at the games. Obviously, this year I actually had, they got rid, Westwood One got rid of the sideline reporter. All NFL guidelines did that. So I was actually color analyst for a couple games this year in the booth, which is fun. It's different. It's so different doing it on radio versus TV, and kind of what you're trying to communicate to the listener, you know, through the different mediums.
Yeah. But what I'm getting to here, I mean, see, this isn't like the old days where everybody crowds around the radio at home, you know, like the fireplace and listens.
Yeah.
But when I was listening, which is when I'm in my car, I thought you did a hell of an excellent job on those NFL games this year and stuff. But my point is, explain to people how you go from point A to point B to point C back to point A in a weekend and stuff. And when did you get your rest, I guess, during those times?
Oh, man. Yeah, it's a lot. You know, but my hardest year, Tim, to be honest, was a couple of years ago. Now, you know, this year was actually easier, if you will. Now, some of the games were difficult. I had a flight delay, you know, like a 14-hour flight delay where I ended up just driving home from Newark. Because of the pandemic, I decided to drive to College Park instead of fly, which was interesting going through West Virginia and Maryland and all that. But for me,
right, but it's beautiful. But it's a beautiful drive.
It's a beautiful drive. Yeah. Almost ran out of gas in the middle of nowhere, West Virginia. I think it was actually Friendsville or Friendstown, West Virginia or Maryland, something like that. Anyway, right near the border, I made it. I coasted down the mountain, made it with like 6 miles to empty. But anyway, a couple of years ago, I was doing studio too. So I used to leave on a Thursday back when we were doing coaches meetings live on a Friday. So I would take this big giant Comrex box, you know, carry the radio unit. I do the show from Friday morning because can't miss football Friday. I go right from that over to meeting with the home coaching staff, do the game Saturday. And if it was in a city I could fly home from, like Newark, you can get back to Columbus. Or even College Park, you can because of Baltimore and Southwest. Yeah. I would fly home Saturday night, spend all day Sunday until about 9 p.m., fly to Chicago Sunday night, do two shows, Buckeye Weekly on Monday. Well, hold on. I would do the radio show for Reaction Monday from Chicago. Then I would do Buckeye Weekly. Then I would do BTN Live. And then right after BTN Live, in my suit, I would get in the Uber to O'Hare and fly home and then do radio, you know, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and then back out again. And I remember my wife being like,
yeah,
I feel like you got to choose studio or games. And I ended up choosing games. I like being at the stadium, and I like meeting with the coaches when we're allowed to and being on the field and all that, and getting to see the different Big Ten campuses has been cool.
Oh yeah.
But it keeps you in it there. It was always between media and coaching for me. And in my mind, there's times where I go back and forth because you miss the locker room. You miss being a part of something really bigger than yourself. But there's also, you know, your family at home and Now we just added a third, and she's a week old now today. Oh, so yeah. It's fun though to kind of go around, man. It is. It's fun to, you know, follow these games and to talk about the sport you love and really do it in a challenging fashion. You know, I can't, like, on a medium like this, we can talk scheme and we can talk three technique and nose, and because you understand it. But when you're on television, you're not only speaking. I tell people, it's like I have to speak to my wife's mom, like my mother-in-law. I can't speak, or my sister-in-law. I can't speak to my wife. My wife will understand if I say, hey, the 3 and the 5 did a stunt and cover up the A and B gap. She knows what I'm talking about. She goes, oh, the ball's going outside. Yeah, she knows that from being my wife. But if I say that on air, if I say, oh, they just ran a stunt, you have to actually explain what the hell is a stunt, because some people listening have no idea what you're talking about. So you have to really, and that's why Herb Street's the best, right? He can take it and dumb it down to where guys who played respect him because of how much he knows, but also people have no idea respect him because it's in a language understandable to them as well.
Yeah. 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 I remember a question I got one time, I was watching with, I'm not going to name names, but watching a game, and one of the people in the room says, why are their pants so tight? You know, I mean, you know, that's what, you know, things like that. That's what you're talking about. You're trying to hit that bullseye, you know, in between and stuff. Hey, by the way, I wanted to ask you, you know, what do you remember being significant about March 23rd, 2013? What do you remember being significant about that? March 23rd. I think that's – maybe I've got the wrong date for you, but that was my 59th.
My wedding day is March 23rd, so yeah, I mean
– that's what I'm saying. That was my 59th birthday is what I was going to tell you. It was significant.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
No, just remember, every time you're buying your wife roses now, March 23rd, it's also Tim May's birthday and Kyrie Irving's birthday, okay?
Yeah. I was making sure. It's funny is that me and my teammate – and this is – it's funny is that he's a really good friend of mine, and – we were on the same team together, but Robert Quinn got married the same day and we're teammates, and we didn't know that we had planned that day together. And so I'll never forget, like, we both invited Chris Long, and Chris was like torn on like, what wedding do I go to? And I told him, I said, hey bro, you're not going to offend me. Rob's was a destination wedding, like in the Bahamas. Mine was in Columbus. Bro, go to the Bahamas. Don't come to Columbus in March. Yeah. Go there. Send me a nice gift. Enjoy yourself.
Yeah, my wife and I, we sneaked off during the football strike and the NFL strike, because I was covering the NFL back then in 82 when we got married. And we got married at over near her, near where she grew up in the Boston area and stuff, and Sudbury, Massachusetts, matter of fact. And I didn't invite people because I didn't want them to have to go 800 miles, you know. And who knows, you know, my wife might have said no at the very end, you know. But I'm still stunned. I'm still stunned by that the greatest victory of my life there. Hey. I'm going to hit a couple of things with you because you've been on the Tim May podcast. Of all the awards you won in college, what was the one that you just, if you had to be introduced as one award winner, what award would that be? Would it be the Butkus? Would it be the, what was it, the Bednarik? What would it be?
That's a really, I actually never won the Bednarik. I won the Bronco Nagurski.
Yeah, Nagurski. I get those two mixed up.
I always say I lost the Bednarik 3 times in a row, so that's not.
That's true.
I do love the Butkus, just because it's Dick Butkus. And to think that in our great history of Ohio State linebackers, I think that AJ got robbed of it in 05. There's been others who have gotten overlooked for it. Of course, you can't go through the history of our guys and think that we don't have more Butkus award winners. And as you know, there's some political stuff in play with it. Timing has to be right. There's a little bit of luck that comes along with it. It's an honor to be recognized. I remember in 06, when I was up for it, I was almost more shocked than winning it in 07. Like in 06, I was up for it. I remember being in Orlando and being like, holy crap, I'm with Puzlesny and Patrick Willis. Like, what the heck, you know? And you're kind of like, cool, I guess I'm here with these guys. I think the Butkus to me really stands out. Although I do love the Ronnie, I do love the Lott Trophy. Although it's relatively new, I love the fact that it's called the Impact Trophy because it's more than just your play. Your play gets you, of course, but it's also academics. It's your integrity. There's other things to it, and they do a phenomenal job out in California when they host you. And it's a cool deal to the point where, like, still today, if I Twitter message Ronnie Lott, he'll respond to me instantly. And it's just it's crazy to think of, like, my goodness, like, that's, you know, that's Ronnie Lott. Like, you grew up watching that cat, and just, it's a really special award as well.
Yeah, anything in Newport Beach has got to be fun, you know.
Especially when you go there, and they do it a little later. So like they usually host it a little later. So you're like, you've done your whole overwhelming tour to Florida. Now you're like, hold on, I get to go to California. Awesome. In college, like perfect. Get me out of Ohio for a little bit. It'd be great.
I was going to say, there was this race car driver named Max Pappas. He's still alive. I mean, doesn't mean like he's passed away, but he drove for the Ray Hall Letterman team for a while. And I'm doing a story with him one time, and he moved from he's from Italy, obviously, Maximiliano Pappas. And he moved from Italy and he moved to Newport Beach. And I said, Max, so why did you move to Newport Beach? He goes, well, I wanted to experience America like Americans. And I go, Newport Beach, man, I'm not sure that's exactly America. Well, he goes, you must understand, in Italy, our idea of America is Baywatch.
Oh, man.
I go, yeah, man, if you got the money, honey, you know. But no, anyway.
Hey, if you got money, California's great. Miami's great.
Yeah.
You know, look, but if you want some of the finer parts of America, and I've driven this drive a lot, you just go from Columbus to St. Louis and stay on Highway 70 for a while. You'll enjoy some different – that's a different aspect of America as you go through Turahawt and Effingham and all of those cities.
Oh, yeah, Effingham. Yeah, that's where I made my left turn because I drove back and forth to see my mom. She had some challenges. She finally passed away in June of this past year, but drove back and forth because I like to drive a lot and went through Effingham at least because I always make that left-hand turn onto 57 there.
57, you know?
Drove through there. I mean, I can tell you every pilot flying J truck stop between here and Little Rock.
That's right.
Yeah. Hey, listen, real quickie. I wanted to ask you this because you have an insight of this maybe better than anybody. You know, these guys that have left early for the NFL from Ohio State, some guys have come back and stuff. But and Orlando Pace and I talked about this when he was on my podcast a few weeks ago. A lot of times you don't realize how much fun it is in college to get to the NFL, and it is a business, you know. Every year, no matter what draft pick you are, you know, just look at Dwayne Haskins Jr. You have to fight for your job, et cetera, and you are
every
a commodity to a certain extent. But what was it like going from Ohio State where, like I said, you played for two national championships in 4 years, you know, and really were in contention even that last year, you know. And in 2005, that talented team, et cetera. But to go – to a place where you're not challenging for a championship. How much of a climate change is that just in the locker room, James, for these guys who are going for the NFL dollars now?
That was a really nice way of putting it by saying not challenging. You could have said, 2-14, 1-15 in a 7-9 year.
Seriously.
It is the biggest difference is that you realize, for one, you realize the business right away, that you're not on scholarship, that this is a job. All those hours you got to go, you know, have off and do class and like that's and you're football now. So if you love it, it's great. Like if you don't love it, it can be stressful. And look, people are really good at this is what I learned too, Tim. People are really good at football. And like, you know, you've ever meet somebody who's like, oh yeah, I do investments, but I don't love it, but I make a good living. And you're like, oh, well, I don't know how you do that. Well, it's the pay. There are guys that treat football that way who are like, they're just so talented and athletic and gifted that they do the littlest amount possible. And next thing you know, they're still making $10 million a year. And you're like, you don't love this? No, actually I don't, not at all. And you're like, it blows my mind. Cause to me, it's like, I put everything into it and I was limited. Yeah. So I'm like, give me some of your skill. But anyway, it's humbling. And you realize real quick that not only, you know, the business side of it, but the turnover is so real. Like you'll meet somebody that you think is a really good player. And you're like, oh, he's definitely one of our best, you know, top six, you know, D linemen that we could use in the rotation. And then he's cut. And you're like, well, why? Well, technically we need a little money here and there. And you're like, oh my gosh. So it's not even – in college, you're like, you recruit the very best. You know, you're bringing the best of everybody possible and may the best win. And it's deeper than that because of the dollar signs. And that was a change. Going to St. Louis, which was a baseball first city, was a change. If you went to any restaurant, they could recognize the entire St. Louis Cardinals team. But it was the first time really in 4 years that I could go out to eat and not get recognized by somebody. Nobody knew me. Wow. It was amazing. Wow. Like, I couldn't go back to Columbus and go out to eat without getting interrupted, but I could go to anywhere in St. Louis and there was no one that would come up. And that really lasted that way for Tim. I could probably count on two hands the amount of times I was recognized in St. Louis ever, which was kind of nice, but I was, you know, but way different from obviously the attention you get in Columbus. But it's just, every day, the best advice I ever got was every day is an interview. And you're either interviewing poorly or you're interviewing, you know, well, and you have to treat it that way. And especially now with the way the rookie scale is different. And if you are interviewing poorly, sooner or later, teams are just going to say bye. It's hard. You can't. And when you get fired, you can't, you're going to take it personally because you've never been fired before. This is a first, like everyone says, well, you don't take it personally. It's business. Well, no, it is personal. I put so much blood, sweat, and tears into this. When I got called in Jeff Fisher's office and they fire you and they say, hey, they didn't even say, hey, will you take a pay cut? They just said, we want to move on without you. And you're like, everything I've given to you the last 7 years, you won't even, there's so much that goes into it. But as you look back and you actually see it from kind of 30,000 feet and you're observing the NFL now, you say, oh, I get it. I get why they did. And I understand. I don't have to agree with it or love it, but you can understand it. And you kind of move on. But every day is an interview. So these kids going to the league, it's just treat every day by every person in the organization that you meet, whether you think it's just some low-level scout that you could care less about. Because guess what? A couple of these low-level scouts that were in the Rams organization are now general manager and assistant general manager. Like my man Ray Agnew, assistant GM in Detroit. You know, he's in a scouting position in St. Louis, but if you just treat, it's like being at Ohio State. If you treat everyone with respect and you're not a jerk, Columbus will take care of you mostly.
Yeah.
It's the same thing in the NFL. If you're just not a jerk to people and you treat people graciously, when they elevate, they remember you. And you never know what kind of doors it opens up.
Yeah. I was going to say though, you know, but Obie Stillwell, you know, got played walk-on at Ohio State a long time ago, but he made a good comment to me one time. He goes, football is that one sport more than maybe any other where somebody else tells you you're done, you know?
Yep.
I mean, in other words, there's no, you know, there, because when you quit, when you're cut from the NFL, you don't go and play, you know, well, if you're an idiot, you do, but you don't go and play on some walk-on team, you know what I mean? It's like what you have worked, you're like you just said, what you busted your butt for your entire life is now over and stuff. And real quick before I go, I just wanted to, you know, you had a bad quadriceps injury or something. I'm trying to remember when you ended up at New Orleans, did that help hasten you out of the league? And were you already planning for that next step in your life?
So it's funny. I was, my right knee had started to kind of, I started getting some arthritic stuff in it, right? It's called a little cartilage gap behind my kneecap back in like 2015. And so you start the process of injecting it with stuff like Syndisc and other, you know, fluids to try to oil that thing up. I call it WD-40 for the joints. And there was a time in 2016, we played like a Thursday night game and we played a Sunday. I drained the knee, I shot it up with Syndisc, and then I had to drain it again on a Thursday and then reshoot it up. And you're like, you're going through this and you're like, and that's 2 years after I had my first daughter. And so you really start thinking about when I first had my kids, when I had London, the first time I started thinking about life after football and walking your girl down the aisle, being all there mentally. I never thought about injury at all until I had London. And so as your body starts getting a certain way, it starts getting painful to work out, which I loved working out. I loved squat day. I loved legs. I loved hang clean. Well, all that stuff hurts once you get a cartilage issue. All that stuff hurts a lot. So
when people are sticking needles in your knee, go ahead now.
So, you know, you're hurting. And so I get to New Orleans and I signed a 3-year deal thinking that I could squeeze out 3 years. And it finally was the overcompensating I had from so after my right knee, and I had a little, my bursa sac, which protects your elbows and if you've ever banged your knee and it swells up huge and then goes away in a couple of days, that's your bursa sac protecting it.
Yeah.
And so mine had been scarred so much through college and the pros that they just took it out. So I don't have one on my right knee anymore. I got that taken out in like 14. So you know, when that happens, and then now your kneecap doesn't have as much mobility. And so now that's where the cartilage in your knee starts to rip, and now you have a gap. Well, off of that, in the overcompensating of that, my left ankle ends up getting like a massive spur, which needs to get removed and sutured down. So now there's an off-season ankle surgery. And then you can't train the same way on your right leg. So your left leg's stronger than your right. So that's where the quad strain comes, is that, you know, you're running one day. There was a Friday practice in New Orleans on a Monday Night Football against the Falcons. I'm running. I strain it. I tell the trainers it hurts a little bit. I try to play. Look terrible playing. End up getting a concussion. Undocumented concussion. With the help of Mike Mowdy, I passed the test on the sideline. I'll say it that way. Okay. Yeah, I got two of the three questions right.
Two fingers. It's two fingers, James. Fingers.
Yeah, no doubt. But I shouldn't have played, but I was fine. And then I never played again after that, because it was just, once that happened, I had time to finally, for the first time in my career, I never missed a game. It was a pride thing more than anything, Tim. You know, I loved playing. I wanted to be out there, and I felt like I always helped my team play. But being forced to miss good time helped me to really reflect on the kind of player that I was. And there's, like, when you're a competitor, that's why Father Time's undefeated. You think in your head, I can get back to that guy. Yeah. But your body says, no, the hell you can't. Like, it's past you, you know? And so I couldn't accept, for one, it wasn't enjoyable to even work out anymore or practice because it hurt. And like, do you want to still keep doing this for what? To chase a piece of jewelry, to lift a trophy? To me, it didn't seem, was that more important than being as healthy as you could be for your girls growing up? And I just got to a point where I was like, your best days are way behind you, and it's time to move on and go home. And that's kind of where I reached my conclusion.
Hey, real quick though, you just brought, I mean, I know you got to get going, but real quick, I wanted to ask you though, following up on that. I mean, you were in locker rooms, I would think, sometimes, like you talked about a while ago, where everybody didn't have the same passion for the sports you had. Did you always feel like the dedication was there of the hunt for the goal that y'all were after? You understand what I'm saying? Did you ever feel like you were on teams occasionally where you were almost wasting your time in the hunt for the playoffs and a Super Bowl? I mean, what, you know what I mean? How frustrating was that for you?
Well, it's funny. There's a lot of guys I played with that could give two craps about practice. And they're like, they felt they could go out there, they could do everything. It's funny because I'm sure there's a lot of guys in the NFL that are doing this system where they've had to do like practice from home, right? And mental reps. Yeah. There's a couple I played with without naming names that claimed that they could not do one physical rep and still be 100% ready to go for a Sunday, where I was the opposite. Like, I needed to go out there. I needed to feel how a run fit felt. I needed to feel how you want me to play this pass concept. Some guys, no. They're claimed we could do walkthrough all week and play Sunday and they'd be happy. At the end of the day, everyone in the NFL, Sunday is easy. You're getting paid for the week. You're getting paid for practice. Because Sunday, most guys will go do Sunday for free. Once you get out there in a normal year and the crowd's going and the fireworks and you're like, dude, this is the NFL. There's a certain – that's easy. It's the – I feel like a turd on Wednesday. You know, we're 3-7 or we're 1-7. And you can tell me I'm getting paid this, but my body hurts. It's gray outside like it is today. I'm sore. You know, I can't warm up. I got, you know, and you're doing the same routine of I'm in the hot tub. I got a heat pack. I got icy hot in my quad. I'm trying to get it warm. And then you're like, okay, I finally feel okay. And then I'm running and someone steps on your big toe. And so now your cold big toe hurts and you just want to chuck something. Like, it's sometimes you have those days where you're like, why am I out here?
But to get better.
I had really great teammates and saw a lot, or some of them that I tell you that don't love the game are still playing. And they're like in year 9 and 10. I mean, it's a long time to do something and make a lot of money when you really don't care that much about it. But And the frustrating thing is that there's some guys, Tim, that if they did care, they could be Hall of Famers. But there's something in them that just has no ambition to be a Hall of Famer. To them, it's like, I'm going to do what I'm good at athletically to provide for my family. And then once I can't anymore, or they fire me, I'll go retire.
Yeah. I just remember we had this pickup football team. We'd play all the time in Texas. You know, back when I was a high teen, you know, out of high school, I was playing, you know, working at Lufkin News and stuff, but we played every weekend. We tried to get up a game with people, just, you know, basically flag. And there was this one guy, he was just great, but I would throw him passes. I was always the quarterback, cause I couldn't run, but I could throw a little, you know? And he would, occasionally catch passes behind his back and stuff, which drove me crazy. But we were so much better with him than without him. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
Those are the kind of guys you just want to go punch and also grab and hug at the same time.
I know.
Hey, last thing, and I'm out of here. You've been around the Big Ten a lot now and stuff. What is the biggest, if you could put it into words, you and Bo talk about this stuff all the time. What is the biggest difference between an Ohio State and everybody else in the Big Ten right now, besides the talent stockpile? If you had to put your finger on it, why will this keep going, you think, this Ohio State run?
Oh, man. Well, I think, for one, Ohio State can go anywhere in the country and recruit. That's where it all starts. I'm not telling you anything new. It's recruiting.
Yeah.
But it's also the development. And so they're in lockstep, and it's been the smooth transition from – so Urban had his guys of, you know, Stamp, Volt, Mick, Mark, all these guys in cohesion. They knew what players they wanted to recruit. It's not just recruiting stars. I think there's a misconception that Urban used to just go after every five-star. No, like, they looked at a quarterback like Hunter Johnson and said, no, he's not it. And so when you're able to look at a five-star and say no in person, you have a really good eye for talent evaluation, and then Mick just develops the crap out of them. From people I've talked to up north, their recruiting is not cohesive like that. It's kind of just scattered go, and you kind of have guys that have their little niche, and there's no cohesion. Now, I think the best hire that Harbaugh could have done was bring Mike Hart home, because you're going to bring one hell of a competitor that will hopefully interject some juice to at least the offense on what it means to play us and really get some fire and spunk back.
Agreed.
Because he's a hell of a competitor. Ton of respect for Mike. And the thing is, though, is like, it's the quarterback, and it's the development of the quarterback. So when is Penn State going to get a guy and then develop a guy? Or Michigan? I mean, Michigan's best quarterback is still Henny. And nobody even knew he's in the league until Mahomes, until the
exactly. game.
So you're looking around. The league's in a weird spot, because even next year, the second best team is Indiana again.
Yeah, James Laurinaitis, one of my favorite people, and now folks know why if they've never heard him before. But I don't know how you've never heard him before, right? Awesome. He's on a 97.1 The Fan with our good buddy Bo Bishop every day of the week. He does color analysis for the Big Ten Network on games. Even does some NFL work from now and again on radio. And one of those great gentlemen out there, right?
He's proven to be, I think, just as good in the media as he was on the field. And that's obviously saying a whole lot. But he works at it, which is the key. He understands that it doesn't just get to float by on his reputation. He's very good at it. I mean, he and Bo, you know, they have us on graciously throughout the year. Mondays and Fridays to get that Letterman Row connection. But, that's to talk for 3 hours about stuff that doesn't just involve college football is difficult as well. He's gotten very good at all that. So always appreciate James's take. He works hard at it, and you know that he's not just spouting off things for attention.
Yeah, he's not only been in the arena too. He's been a gladiator. He was a gladiator in the arena, which is wow, saying a lot, man. There's a guy that loved the game, loved preparing for the game, and now he loves, he just took that work initiative right into his newfound profession of being a commentator. So no surprise that he's successful. You know, one thing we touched on, and I wanted to move on with you about, is like, you know, yes, Ohio State got beat in this past national championship game, much like Ohio State got beat in 2006 by Florida in that national championship game. And that team bounced back, played again for the national championship, didn't win. You know, that just because you put in more effort and stuff doesn't mean you're still not going to meet a better team. You know, that's just the way sports are. But, my take on the Alabama team that Ohio State got beat by this year was, if you're Ohio State, you always strive to be the best program out there, deepest, et cetera. But, you know, you can wear yourself out chasing the tail that was that Alabama team. Like I told James, I've told you many times, that's the best offense I've ever seen from Alabama. I think you could argue it the best offense in college football history if they'd gotten to play a real full season. They almost did anyway. It's right there, in my opinion, with LSU from a year ago. But, you know, the Alabama's not going to be the same offense next year, this coming season, as it was this past season. But I think Ohio State, when you look at what made Alabama great, was the guys that returned to that offense. Now you look at Ohio State with Chris Olave coming back, with Jeremy Ruckert coming back, with the two tackles coming back, and with, I think, a really – yes, so Trey Sermon has moved on, but Ohio State's going to have a fleet of running backs. They've got those wide receivers, those freshman wide receivers who are going to be stepping up into a bigger role this coming season. Mm-hmm. And then if C.J. Stroud or Jack Miller the third, or whomever ends up being the quarterback, is as good as we think they can be, as good as Josh Meyer said on my podcast last week, he thinks they can be. He thinks this is Dwayne Haskins, Joe Burrow all over again, a big-time competition in the spring to find out who the number one quarterback is. Yeah. This could be that offense that everybody's talking about in 2021 is maybe the best offense in college football.
Yeah, I think they got the pieces back that they needed. You know, you could afford for Trey Sermon not to use that bonus year of eligibility because of what you had coming in with those two signees with Travion Henderson and Evan Pryor. And then potentially a healthy Marcus Crowley, Mayan Williams, what he did at the end of that year. And still, I mean, I think it will come from those four, the primary guy, but that's not to rule out Master Teague. He's obviously a veteran guy. He's going to have every chance to keep that role moving forward. We can have that conversation throughout the year, but
yeah,
look at what you have on the offensive line with Jeremy Ruckert returning, the elevation potentially from Cade Stover, you know, Chris Olave leading that unit, which has, you know, just recruited better than anyone else in the country, a wide receiver under Brian Hartline. All those things I'm saying is that I didn't view Mac Jones as like Joe Burrow or some superstar quarterback. He was very good. He was sort of the evolutionary Nick Saban game manager. Like, he was obviously better than Greg McElroy. He could do more things, but he's not, I think, someone who you build an NFL team around like you maybe would Joe Burrow. Or Dwayne Haskins, even though it didn't work out in Washington. So Ohio State doesn't need C.J. Stroud or Jack Miller to be Justin Fields or win the Heisman, although they could. And that would elevate them into a stratosphere. But Ohio State's going to be really productive on offense no matter what. And obviously Ryan Day's got to get that pick right at quarterback, and we're probably going to talk about it for the next 8 months. But
yeah,
they got back everybody that they could have needed. That Thayer Munford deal, I mean – How significant is that for the offensive line? A surprise they got. And Ruckert could have gone. Olave could have gone. Both of those guys would have been drafted early, in my opinion, maybe more so Olave than Ruckert. But, I mean, you get NFL-caliber players back, that's exactly how Alabama built that Death Star that they were last year.
Yeah, absolutely. And guys who have been there and done it at the highest level, you know, they can just take you places you – sometimes you can't believe, and they bring guys along with them. And like, you know, even Ryan Day pointed out in the teleconference we had with him last week, you know, having a Chris Olave just back in the room, you know, the wide receiver room and back in the team room is huge from a leadership standpoint. A guy that has shown not only he's a great receiver, but the willingness to play special teams, et cetera. And it's not whether he's a standout on special teams, although he is, but it's the point is he's unselfish. You know, that's the big difference between, it's James Laurinaitis I talked about, you know, the difference between the camaraderie and the esprit de corps of a college team compared to an NFL team is sometimes night and day. You know, when you're getting paid and there are guys sometimes maybe not even practicing as hard as they can, maybe not even becoming as good as they can be, but they're still really great. They can get by on Sundays, you know, but they're not putting in that big-time team effort kind of a approach. It can affect your team, whereas in college football, the elite programs have that. Ohio State clearly has that. And the way they got through the COVID-19, the pandemic challenge was amazing to me when you look back on it now. And like Josh Meyer said on last week's podcast, you know, in some respects, it's hard to believe it's now over, you know. It, as much of a grind as it was, as much of a mental and physical grind it was. Well, the guys coming back now, they've been through that. They've known what it's like to, like, be one and one – all for one and one for all and every other cliche you can throw in there. Yeah. And now it's, you know, as soon as everybody's vaccinated, you know, in Ohio it seems to be the slowest state in the country to get people vaccinated. I'm 66, and I'm still not in line yet, which is kind of rubbing me the wrong way, but that's another story for another day. But as soon as you get back to some sort of normalcy, I expect this program to take another leap. I don't know if you agree or not.
Yeah, and I think that that's, you know, part of the reason why Chris Olave is coming back for another year is that, you know, people wondered why, because there were mock drafts that had him in the first round. Yeah. What do you have left to prove at Ohio State? Got the Clemson redemption and all that. I mean, it would be too easy to say he wants to win a national title. And knowing Chris Olave, just, you know, the little bit that I do, I don't think that that is what is really fueling him. He's wired differently for sure. But what you have to remember, the kind of room and culture that he came into when he was a freshman, and the expectation was from these three guys who we've talked about a lot on your podcast. Some of them have been on the podcast. What Terry McLaurin, Paris Campbell, and Johnny Dixon did to, you know, they all had decisions of varying degrees, whether it was to just keep playing football or Paris Campbell to go pro, and Terry McLaurin could have done that too after 4 years. Be a senior. Teach the young guys. Do the maximum you can to boost your own draft stock, but also give back at the same time. The next year, they had three guys that are just exactly like that, maybe to a slightly lesser degree in terms of their NFL potential, but Austin Mack, KJ Hill, and Benjamin Victor. Be a senior. Teach the guys. Go through it. You're going to have your most productive year. Compete for championships. So last year was a little bit of an anomaly with Ohio State leaning so heavily on Chris Olave and Garrett Wilson and not playing six guys. And I think that there's a part of this, and I'm not meaning to put words in Chris Olave's mouth because he has his own motivations, but I think he wants to leave that senior legacy for 4 years. I think he wants to – people were worried about the freshman transferring out. I think he wants to help Julian Fleming, help G. Scott, you know, yeah. Help, you know, Jackson Smith and Jigba become the kind of guys. And, you know, I think he wants to be part of that in another six-man unit and then go on when you've exhausted everything you can give. And that's, again, part of what you're talking about with the whole program.
Yeah, man, I like those three guys you just named, though. I mean, I think those three guys are going to be their own three amigos, is you know, in graduados. We'll see if they become the three graduados again. But Trace graduados. But and then Emeka Egbuka, like you were just talking about coming in. I mean, you know, they're it's just amazing, the parade.
It'd be cool. Yeah,
it'd be cool just to watch the parade of guys going into the wide receiver room every day. You know, and then sending out the lesser programs around the country and have them drool over it. I mean, it's when you get lightning, you know, in a bottle, then you can spring it on people, and that's what Ohio State's getting. You know, one quickie before we move on, I promised people on Twitter the other night I was going to tell a quick little Hank Aaron anecdote. Hank Aaron, in my opinion, the true all-time home run leader who passed away over the weekend. I'll get to that in a minute, but defensively, as you look at this, because we're going to have plenty of podcasts to talk about things and break things down. But what is that one spot that you think they clearly need to address in offseason and spring to bring along quickly to get this defense back up to snuff from the standpoint of the passing game defense?
Yeah, I think that, I mean, you can't – number 122, it would be hard for Ohio State to be worse nationally than what they were. I actually have confidence that that's going to get fixed with the amount of talent that they've recruited in the secondary. You know, give Kerry Combs a full spring. Hopefully it'll be normal. You know, we don't know for sure that that will be the case, even though Ohio State's planning for that and testing. Yeah. You know, you get to that bridge in March in that situation. But if you get a more normal year, off-season development, coaching, implementing maybe some new looks, you know, I just think that they're going to be okay there. A healthy Cameron Brown and Seven Banks, that's a pretty good way to start at cornerback, in my opinion. Marcus Williamson could do whatever you want, but maybe now he's allowed to go back into the slot. You bring along legend Cavazos and Ryan Watts. I think those are two really talented young cornerbacks. And then obviously at safety, now Josh Proctor's got experience. Maybe Lathan Ransom's rise allows him to move around some. You know, we'll see. I think they have the pieces there. So when I look at this spring or this year, I think it's possible that Ohio State needs to get a veteran experienced linebacker to help, which is not to take nothing away from Dallas Gann or Taraja Mitchell, Kayvon Pope, some of these younger guys that they've recruited. But, you know, because they had those four guys who were so good for so long, there's a little bit of a lack of actual game experience for them. And if that's available, whether that's from Tennessee or USC, you know, I don't know how that will play out, but I think that, you know, you probably need to add one more experienced piece because, you know, it's not going to be solely on the defensive backs to get that job done. It's going to take an all 11 situation. And, you know, so that's where, to me, I just look at linebacker more for March and April than I actually do in the secondary.
Yeah, it's amazing, man. I talked to James about that in the interview, like what changed between 18 and 19, you know, and things like that. And people can rewind and listen to it. But it is amazing how those guys went from, like, maligned to, hey, they're pretty good, to, hey, they're really good, to now they're gone. And now you're really – everybody who ripped on those guys are going to miss them, you know. Not the least of whom is Justin Hilliard, for example. There were four guys in the final – I mean, it's hard to get four linebackers – of that caliber on one team at one time, you know, it's so that's what I think is going to be the biggest thing they have to, because those guys helped out as much in pass pro as they did anything else, you know. So it's going to be interesting to see how it goes. And by the way, you know, like I said, I promised, you know, this little anecdote, it's not as maybe as deep as some people might think the way I set it up, but I was sad to see the passing of Hank Aaron over the weekend. I got to meet Hank Aaron when I was 10 years old. My dad was, I think it was 9 or 10 years old. We were in Milwaukee on vacation. Well, actually, it was a working vacation. My dad was a plant manager down in Alabama, and Borden Chemical had a plant up in Sheboygan, Wisconsin. But my dad was best friends with Frank Larry, who was known as the Yankee killer back in the 50s when he pitched for the Detroit Tigers. But, you know, back then you pitched complete games almost every outing. So eventually your right arm fell off, you know. Then they'd tack it back on, and you'd be a player coach or something for a couple of years before you. Anyway, he was with the Milwaukee Braves at that point. And after the game was over, that was our first Major League Baseball game we ever got to see. My dad took me and my older brother Ben into the locker room with Frank Larry, and he introduced us to players, you know, around. And he introduced this guy named Hank Aaron. You know, he said, this guy's going to be good, I'm telling you. You know, we just kind of went – we didn't know who he was, you know. Of course, that was back when you had Chief Nakahoma in the left field. It was a total different time. But Eddie Matthews, by the way, the third baseman, I got to meet him. I used his bat in Little League, Eddie Matthews' model. So that was cool. But anyway, I didn't see Hank Aaron again until right after he retired. He was an official with the Braves organization. And he came to Columbus one time when the Richmond Braves were playing at the Columbus Clippers back in the old Cooper Stadium, and they sent me out there just to do a story on it. And he was in town also promoting something else, like, you know, Zenith TVs or something like that, you know. So I went there and introduced myself, and I told him about meeting him when I was like 9 or 10 years old, and he laughed. Of course, he didn't remember me from Adam. But we started talking. One of the more congenial men I've ever run into, big-time star. Well, before I went out to the ballpark, there was a guy, I won't say his last name, but his first name was Tom. He worked at the Columbus Dispatch with us, and he begged me to get Hank Aaron's autograph for his son, who was a huge fan of Hank Aaron. And I said, man, I don't do that. I've never gotten autographs. And he goes, well, you got to get his autograph for me, Bob. Anyway, long story short, I said, I finally agreed. Okay, I'll get his autograph. So we're sitting there, and I'm interviewing Hank Aaron. Next thing you know, me and Hank are on first-name basis. He's calling me Tim. I'm calling him Hank. We're both from Alabama. Not exactly the same backgrounds in Alabama, but we're both from Alabama. And we're having fun talking about that. And I said, finally got to the end. I said, Hank, I said, I've never done this before. I said, I don't believe in these things, but a lot of people do. I said, I got a good buddy. And his son, and by the way, I was close to this guy, but I wasn't close to his family. I didn't know his family that well. And I said, yeah, his son would like to get your autograph. I said, could you do that for me? He goes, oh, absolutely, Tim. He goes, what's his name? I said, Tom Jr. And he says, to Tom Jr., keep hitting the home runs. Hank Aaron, 44. And he circled the 44. And I went, that's great. So I felt, you know, pretty good. I went back and I handed the autograph to my friend Tom. And he said, Tim, this is great. He goes, but my son's name is Pat. And I said, see, that's why I don't ask for autographs.
Right.
But anyway, Hank Aaron couldn't have been a nicer dude, and may he rest in peace. He was trying to be an example for people taking that COVID-19 vaccination. And you know, I don't know what all went wrong. You know, when you get to be older in life, there are all kinds of things that can catch up with you all at once. But Hank Aaron, rest in peace, my man. One of the great sports stars of all time. Hey, anything else you want to add, Austin, before we call it a day?
We got a long off season, buddy. Let's we can save it up. You know, James, if people made it this far, they should probably just rewind and listen to James Laurinaitis instead of me again anyway.
Yeah, by the way, I've got a story coming later in the week. I want to point out how Ohio State's approaching this quarterback battle. You know, you guys have touched on it. You know, you regular guys, LettermanRow.com, have touched on it quite a bit too. But I wanted to show how things are evolving in the spring practice approach to things, because you know what? Every rep is valuable. Yeah. And the more valuable you can make that rep, the better you are. And so I'm gonna write a little story at the end of the week about that, about how Ryan Day, man, they're staying on the cutting edge of things when it comes to preparation and also getting a team ready, because they lost a whole spring ball of last year, which they're trying to make up for. They're going to be trying to make up for with a kind of a novel approach, in my opinion. But until then, for Austin Ward, this is Tim May with the Tim May Podcast. We'll see you next week.